This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
It's a great honor to have Dr. Robert Higgs with us today. Bob Higgs is senior fellow at the Independent Institute and editor of the Independent Review. He's an adjunct scholar of the Mises Institute and, in fact, received the Schlarbaum Prize for Lifetime Achievement and Liberty last year from the Institute. He's the author of more than 20 books, most famously Crisis and Leviathan. His most recent book, Neither Liberty Nor Safety. Bob has got many specialties, but I've always been in awe of his work on the subject of war, World War II, economics of war, all aspects of this most central and vicious activity of the state. Bob, great to have you with us. And of course, as we know, the U.S. state currently involved in a number of wars and threatening and planning for even more wars.
Sad to say, Lou, the war business never ends, at least for the United States of America. There's an interesting history of American wars called A Nation Made by War, and I think to an extent that few Americans really appreciate that that title captures an essential element of our past.
When people think about American history, we're all trained to think of the wars and the war presidents. And astounding to me, we still see people arguing that war may have its downside, but at least it's economically a great thing.
It never fails. Every time a new war breaks out or appears likely to break out, there's invariably a discussion in the media about the positive side of all this horror, which will be that it will be, quote, good for the economy. I suspect that if we gave a true-false test to the American public, and certainly to the people who write for the press, at least 90% of them would say it's true that war is good for the economy.
These days, we are all thinking about the Great Depression with what's happening in the financial markets and the way the Bush administration seems to be reprising Hoover and Roosevelt's policies. But does everybody in America except you believe that World War II cured the Depression?
Not everybody. I think over the years I've made a little bit of progress in persuading people against that belief. I started out many years ago in teaching economic history courses, and I concluded fairly early on that this idea that war is good for the economy was an enormous mistake, and so I began to teach my students why it was a mistake, and eventually I started to write journal articles and parts of books on that topic, and I didn't expect to make a big impression on my colleagues, but I think over the years I have made some headway, and so my writings are now listed and discussed in economic history textbooks, and some people have caught on, so I no longer despair of persuading anyone of this view, but it's tough sledding, Lou. This is a view that has become so deeply embedded in people's thinking about history more than anything else, because they became convinced of this idea because the Great Depression appeared to have been ended by U.S. involvement in World War II, and the people who lived through those experiences themselves all seemed to believe it was the war that ended the Depression. But in reaching that conclusion, they have certainly not used the kind of reasoning and facts that an economist would use. And when we begin to ask more seriously, in what sense did the war end the Depression? It boils down almost completely to the fact that unemployment disappeared. And then if you go one step further and ask, and why did unemployment disappear? The answer is overwhelmingly because the armed forces were built up to a maximum of more than 12 million persons in 1945. Remember that before the war started, there were maybe 8 or 9 million people unemployed. So you don't have to be very good at arithmetic to see that that pulling the 12 million prime age workers out of the labor force is probably going to get rid of 8 or 9 million people being unemployed. And that's what happened. And of course, the main reason the armed forces got so big was because of the draft during World War II. So if you're willing to threaten people and tell them go into the armed forces or go to prison, you can get rid of unemployment. That's the true lesson we have here, but many people have not really appreciated it.
Well, and of course, it also, from the Keynesian state standpoint, had the benefit of killing a lot of the unemployed, too, World War II.
Fortunately, not so many in this country as in others, but there were more than 1 million casualties on the U.S. side and over 400,000 dead in that total. So a great many people did lose their lives. It's also true, when you mention the Keynesian perspective, it's also true that the gross national product went up enormously during the war, and that has, I think, done a lot to fool economists, because they're trained to think of the gross domestic product as an almost ideal index of the size of the economy's output. And despite the many problems in the definition and measurement of gross domestic product, they get used to this. And when they go back and look at the data and see GDP zooming upward, almost doubling during the war, they say, wow, this is an enormous economic boom. But if you disaggregate the GDP and say, well, what components of GDP were increasing, you find that almost the only part of GDP that increased was war production, was munitions and payments for the services of the armed forces and related civilian war workers. So what we got during the war was not at all comparable to an ordinary economic boom. It was simply a gigantic burst of production of arms and ammunition, and of course much of that was totally worthless for anything other than wreaking death and destruction. And of course it did its job in that sense. It did allow the United States, along with its allies, to defeat its enemies in the war. But to conclude that that experience validates somehow the Keynesian idea that if the government only spends enough money, it can always get the economy out of a depression, is a tremendous fallacy.
Bob, the Keynesians at the time and secondhand dealers and ideas in the newspapers and magazines, too, said that, gee, it would be a terrible thing once the war was over to just let all these soldiers back into the economy to dismantle any federal programs. And, of course, you had vast areas of a sensibly private economy in terms of the military-industrial complex, all in the federal payroll. That would be very bad. It would bring the Depression back in even worse form if any of this were to be ended, especially ended quickly. And so there should be, at the very most, a gradual cutdown. But thank goodness, of course, that didn't happen. And you've done some very important work on exactly what happened in that year after the war.
It is interesting, Lou, that during the war, Keynesian economists really came into their own. Quite a large number of young economists from Harvard and other leading economics departments had taken positions in the government bureaucracy or working for the Fed, and they were all totally convinced on the basis of primitive Keynesian models that when the government cut back its enormous war spending at the end of the war, then the economy would fall back into a Great Depression. And, of course, nothing like that happened. In fact, almost the exact opposite of that happened. I've calculated that the year 1946 was the single best year in all American history for genuine economic progress. Now, when I say that, remember that official GDP fell very substantially that year. But you won't find any old people who remember those days telling you that 1946 was much like 1932. It wasn't anything like 1932. It was gloriously productive because in 1946, the private component of GDP, the things that people really value, and we know they value them because they voluntarily spend their own money for them, those goods and services increased by an amount of probably about 30% or more. So it was just a gigantic leap back into prosperity, and it occurred for a number of reasons, but primarily because when the government dismantled its war economy and discontinued many of the wartime controls, it created an enormous opportunity for the reestablishment of a free economy. Now, I'm not going to say it was laissez-faire, because it wasn't anything close to that, but it was a gigantic change from the command economy of the war years. And that was the boost, the condition that people had been needing ever since 1929. And finally, when they got it in 1946, they responded tremendously, and a huge outpouring of private goods and services came forth.
Bob, is a general lesson here for us. Especially in these days when we have people saying that not only if we were to cut back on the government, but if we are not going to engage in a huge increase in government power, that we all face economic disaster.
I think 1946 is a very instructive year, Lou, precisely for the reason you say. We're constantly being told, especially right now during this bogus financial crisis, that the future is too horrible to contemplate unless the government undertakes huge interventions in the economy. And yet, our experience in the past is that the future is too horrible to contemplate if the government does undertake huge interventions in the economy. And unfortunately, right now, if these pirates get their way, we're going to create genuine great economic difficulties that don't have to be created. They're being added to a situation that, if the government were to move in the opposite direction, would be self-correcting. But unfortunately, the powers that be, of course, are all inclined to go immediately to the use of government power, rather than relying on the creativity and intelligence and motivation of private individuals.
Dr. Bob Higgs, I want to thank you for being on with us. Everybody take a look at his archive on lourockwell.com. All the articles on there repay reading. Take a look at any of his books, brilliant and eloquent and original. And Bob, an honor to have you on the show.
My pleasure, Lou.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by lourockwell.com. The best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@lourockwell.com. And thanks for listening.